Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the removal of sanctions is the prerequisite for a good agreement with the P4 plus one group in Vienna. Iran reports nearly 1,700 new coronavirus infections, the lowest in more than a year. And China says the United States is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction to interfere in other countries and to incite division. Hello and welcome from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran's president says the ongoing negotiations in Vienna with the remaining signatories to the JCPOA will reach a good deal if the other parties are determined to lift U.S. sanctions against Tehran. Ebrahim Raisi said Tehran definitely pursues such an agreement. He was addressing Iranian ambassadors and heads of Iranian diplomatic missions abroad. Raisi also criticized certain regional countries for normalizing ties and relations with Israel, saying such a move will neither benefit them nor Tel Aviv. Also present at the meeting was Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian. He also highlighted the importance of removing U.S. sanctions against Iran and said his ministry has a duty to do that. He also said a central plank of Tehran's foreign policy should be the enhancement of relations with neighboring countries. Amir Abdullahian added a priority of Iran's foreign policy is to forge closer ties with Asian states. Well, a source close to the Iranian negotiating team in Vienna has told Press TV that the ongoing negotiations are based on the draft proposals that Iran put forward during the seventh round of talks. Now, the source added that the talks are based on proposed changes to drafts presented in the sixth round. Now, Iran and the other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal have kicked off the third day of their seventh round of talks in Vienna. The Islamic Republic has repeatedly stressed that the negotiations should lead to a verifiable removal of all sanctions against it. On Friday, Iran's lead negotiator met with the Austrian foreign minister. Ali Bagheri Khani stressed Iran's seriousness and goodwill in the talks, saying the 2015 nuclear deal is alive because of Tehran's responsible conduct. Bagheri Khani insisted that dishonest reports from outside the negotiating room won't weaken Iranian delegation's will to reach a deal securing the nation's rights and interests. I'd like to cross over to Vienna now, speaking to Sayed Mohammed Marandi, University Professor, Political Analyst, and is there in Vienna for these talks. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's talk about overall, do you believe that progress is being made, and do you think that the European signatories are really willing to do their responsibility this time around?
We'll have to wait and see, but the Iranians have been very clear that the drafts that existed or were written during the first six rounds, those drafts have not been removed from the table. The new texts are added to those drafts. In other words, they complement them and they deal with the deficiencies that exist in the drafts. Initially, the Europeans were very critical of this, very negative, but they gradually shifted, and the environment is more businesslike now, and that's all Iran wanted. Iran was saying that its rights within the framework of the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, that the 2015 nuclear deal must be fully accepted, and that the other side must abide by its side of the bargain, and that its actions must be verified. And so the Europeans seem to be moving in the right direction, but it's very early on in the negotiations.
Now, Ms. Marandi, we saw last week again the United States, sanction another Iranian entity. So at the same time, we have these talks going on, and of course the United States is not part of these actual talks, but at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to have to rejoin the JCPOA and of course be the main party in definitely totally removing these sanctions. With that being said, do you think that the United States is at that point that really they would be willing to remove the sanctions? Because we see a very antagonistic type of behavior coming out of Washington still.
That remains to be seen. The very fact that you, as you pointed out, that they imposed new sanctions shows exactly why the Iranians are saying all the sanctions must be removed and that the Americans must observe certain conditions. And also, the Americans can't simply have sanctions under different names. All of those sanctions are violations of the JCPOA, because according to the JCPOA, the Americans and the Europeans must help normalize Iranian trade relations. In fact, they must actually facilitate it. And these sanctions are all violations of that. And the very fact that, as I said, that the Americans continue to impose sanctions, they're just stressing the point that the Iranians have been making all along, that they are not trustworthy, and that if there are not reassurances, the Americans will simply go back and violate the deal as they did in the past. But I think what is important is that the Europeans see that the current administration is very serious about Iran getting everything that it is supposed to get through the nuclear deal, and that shift in Tehran, I think, has been registered in Europe and the United States. And since the talks continue, I think that is itself significant.
Okay, and on that note, appreciate you being with us out of Vienna. University professor and political analyst at Mohammed Marandi. Well, a U.S. House panel is targeting Iran's defense program by passing a law that aims to counter the country's drone capability. Now, the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee says the bipartisan bill addresses what he calls the growing threat of Iran's lethal drones. Gregory Meeks accuses Iran and its allied groups of carrying out drone attacks against U.S. forces and allies in the Middle East. Meeks says the act seeks to crack down on the production and purchase of Iranian unmanned combat aerial vehicles. Iran's drone power has become a source of concern for the U.S. General Kenneth McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command, has previously said Iran's drone activity caused his country to lose its air superiority. Iran has time and again said its military power is only for defensive purposes. Now, turning to Iran itself, which has reported nearly 1,700 new coronavirus infections, the lowest in more than a year. The figure brings the total number of cases to around 6.1 million. 58 people died of COVID during a span of 24 hours, taking the overall number of fatalities to 130,000. Coronavirus figures have been on a downward trend. Since the government started a mass vaccination campaign, some 110 million jabs have been administered, 59 million as first dose and 50 million as second dose. Well, anger is flaring up in Austria over COVID restrictions. Tens of thousands hit the streets in the capital, Vienna, again to protest a nationwide lockdown and a sweeping vaccine mandate. Protesters have gathered in Vienna's main square, carrying signs with slogans such as "No to vaccination" and "Enough is enough." This is the latest in a series of protests against the government's coronavirus measures. The rallies broke out late last month after the government imposed a national lockdown to squelch a fresh resurgence of the pandemic. There are also plans to make COVID vaccinations compulsory from February. Well, the mandate will apply to people age 14 and over, with holdouts facing fines of up to $4,000 every 3 months. Moving on to other news now this hour, the UK's High Court ruled on Friday that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange can be extradited to the U.S. to face espionage charges. Now, this overturns a court ruling earlier this year and follows U.S. assurances about his treatment. His fiancée has slammed the verdict as grave miscarriage of justice, saying an appeal will be launched. Advocates of press freedom have also voiced alarm at the ruling. Reporters Without Borders are warning about the implications for journalism and press freedom worldwide. Now, the 50-year-old Australian is wanted in the U.S. for publishing classified military and diplomatic cables. If convicted, he could face up to 175 years in prison. Assange was arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy in London in 2019 after being holed up there for 7 years. Well, I'd like to cross over to Vienna. Welcome, Richard Medhurst. Thanks so much for being with us, Richard. Good to see you again. Now, Richard, lawyers for the United States government have told a London court that any sentence imposed on Assange could be served at an Australian prison if he is extradited to the U.S. to face charges. Now, provided that Australia should offer consent to allow a prisoner transfer to happen. This assurance is part of the argument that the U.S. government lawyers used to appeal that January ruling by London District Court that Mr. Assange should not be extradited. So the basic question and concern is, what are the chances that the U.S. will not violate the terms and conditions of Assange extradition?
Hi, Marcy. Thanks for having me on. Well, that's a very good question, because the U.S. say that Assange can serve his sentence in his home country, Australia, but Australia needs to say yes as well. And so far, I can tell you, because I've been covering the court proceedings, Australia said nothing. And this is very clear. Both countries must agree to the transfer ahead of time. So as far as this assurance is concerned, it's absolutely meaningless unless Australia specifically says yes now. And obviously, Australia and the United States being Five Eyes countries, it's really, really not that far-fetched to suspect the United States would go talk to Australia in back channels and tell them, just don't take Assange. After all, Australia has said nothing, right? Now, as far as that assurance goes, it's you know, the ball is on Australia's court. Now, the other assurance is that they won't place Assange in ADX Florence, which is a federal super maximum prison in Colorado, and they won't place him in special administrative measures. If you look at the assurance, if you actually read it, there's a back door placed in the language. So the United States have said they won't put Assange at ADX or under SAMs unless he does something that meets the test for an imposition of a SAM. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could just cough and they could say, oh, he's passing off secrets, and then throw him in a SAMs jail cell. And they have other things, by the way. They have things like communications management units, where they also isolate you completely. There's another thing called the special housing unit. So they could put Assange in a special housing unit or a CMU and isolate him and then say, see, we didn't break the assurances. He's not under SAMS. And the whole point why the judge blocked the extradition is because isolation, not specifically just SAMS, but isolation would drive Assange to take his life if extradited to the U.S. And I find it really disastrous that the judges just trusted, that the High Court in the U.K. trusts these assurances when the United States has a history of violating them. They, you know, they told David Mendoza, Assange's lawyers brought up David Mendoza's case as, mm-hmm. as proof that you can't trust these assurances. And I published classified documents from his case. I interviewed him as well. They also told Mendoza the same thing. They said, you can serve your sentence in Spain. They lied. They kept him there for 7 years, and he had to sue Spain and sue the United States to get back. I highly doubt Assange would be as lucky.
On that note, I thank you for being with us. Richard Medhurst, out of Vienna. Moving on to other news now this hour, China responds angrily after the U.S. excluded it from a summit on democracy. Beijing says Washington is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction to interfere in other countries. China believes the latest summit aimed to draw lines of ideological prejudice. The country also accuses the U.S. of inciting division while instigating color revolutions overseas. China promises to resolutely resist all kinds of what it calls fake democracies. The U.S. held a summit on Thursday and Friday, bringing together more than 100 world leaders. Taiwan, a self-ruled island claimed by China, was also invited. The island is a major source of contention between China and the U.S. over Washington's military and political support for Taiwan that seeks independence from mainland China. Now, the U.K. says it has granted another 23 licenses to French fishermen to resolve a post-Brexit dispute over fishing rights. The licenses were agreed upon late on Friday after British officials met EU counterparts and ensured vessels qualified to work in UK waters. This after December 10th deadline set by the EU. France has not commented on the latest development, but prior to this, Paris had asked for licenses for 104 of its boats so that they could operate in British and Channel Island waters under last year's Brexit deal. Now, under the agreement, EU fishermen can continue to work in British waters if they can prove they used to fish there. Paris and London have been at loggerheads for months now over how many licenses French fishermen should get. And now to the U.S., where dozens of people are dead after a tornado rips through the state of Kentucky, devastating several counties. The town of Mayfield was the hardest hit by the tornadoes, where a roof collapsed at a factory, resulting in 50 fatalities. Massive storms shooting off of tornadoes ravaged large swaths of central U.S. in the early hours of Friday. The National Storm Prediction Center reported at least 24 tornadoes touched down across five states. Officials have confirmed deaths in Arkansas and Tennessee. In Illinois, emergency responders are searching for 100 survivors in a collapsed warehouse. Electricity providers say at least 300,000 customers across seven states are without power. Isolated tornadoes remain possible for Tennessee and Ohio in the northern Gulf states. And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldless Edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's PM praised the execution of a Palestinian who was lying on the ground by paramilitary police near Damascus Gate in Al-Quds. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Maureen Claire Morphy, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Bennett Blesses Street Executions of Palestinians. Stay tuned for more. Naftali Bennett praised the execution of a Palestinian who was lying on the ground by paramilitary police near Damascus Gate in Al-Quds recently. The Zionist regime prime minister gave the officers his full backing. Bennett said, "That is how our forces are expected to act, and that is how they acted." Bennett's comments demonstrate his commitment to the Zionist regime's shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians that intensified during the last several years of his predecessor Benjamin Netanyahu's tenure. After a strike of street executions of suspected Palestinian attackers in late 2015, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem blamed Netanyahu for the transformation of police officers and even of armed civilians into judges and executions. The shooting death of Muhammad Salima, 25, as he lay on the ground and posed no immediate danger, generated unusual controversy over the execution of a Palestinian after eyewitnesses' video circulated online. That 23-second video, recorded from a bystander's vehicle, shows two Zionist border police officers firing at Salima from a distance as he lay on the ground and posed no threat to anyone's life. A 50-second video clip was later released by the Zionist regime police showing the events leading up to Salima's execution. The Zionist regime releases such footage when it thinks it bolsters its narrative of events, but in countless other cases, such as the execution of Iyad Halak in Al-Quds last year, it prevents video from being made public. The video released by the Zionist regime police appears to show Salima walking across the street. The Zionist regime police video also shows at least three other armed Israeli regime officers quickly arriving on the scene. The man allegedly sustained moderate to severe wounds, according to Israeli regime media. The Zionist regime forces operate under a confirm the kill policy exposed in a military court hearing following the 2004 shooting death of a 13-year-old Iman Alhams by troops in southern Gaza. More than a decade later, that horrific practice generated widespread outcry after a video published by Bethlehem showed the Zionist regime army medic Ilor Azaria shooting at a prone Palestinian in Al-Khalil. According to writer Richard Silverstein, Azaria had asked his commander for permission to confirm the kill before firing at Abd al-Fattah Yusri al-Sharif. Azaria served a 9-month prison sentence in what was at once a lenient punishment and a rare instance of the Zionist regime troop being held accountable for a Palestinian's death. The killer medic is hailed as a hero for Israelis, and the Israeli regime has moved to criminalize the filming of Israeli regime troops as part of a wider effort to maintain impunity over abuses against Palestinians. The Palestinian Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions National Committee called on the International Criminal Court to stop delaying charges against enablers of Israeli regime apartheid following the execution of Salima. Bethlehem described the shooting death of Salima as a summary execution. The UN Human Rights Office in Palestine stated that it was shocked by the apparent extrajudicial execution of Salima. The UN office said extrajudicial killings such as this are the consequence of the regular resort to lethal force by well-armed and well-protected Israeli personnel against Palestinians, an almost total lack of accountability for killings and injuries of Palestinians by Israeli forces. Israeli regime leaders rallied around the border police officers who executed Salima, with Police Commissioner Kobi Shabtai proclaiming them as heroes. He was echoed by Border Police Head Amir Cohen, who said, "The heroes acted according to how we trained them," unquote. Bennett tweeted his appreciation for the Border Police officers who neutralized the actor. His accolades were accompanied by a photo of the two officers with their faces blurred out. Bennett added that the video released by police and shared by the Zionist regime's Hasbara, or official propaganda apparatus, turned the perception on its head. The Zionist regime's so-called justice ministry reportedly opened an investigation into Salima's action, but the two officers have returned to operational duty, according to Israeli media. The Zionist regime's self-investigation mechanisms have long been dismissed by human rights groups as a fig leaf for the occupation, as Bethlehem has put it. The group, along with the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, issued a report earlier in the week exposing the Zionist regime's sham investigation into the killing and maiming of protesters during Gaza's Great March of Return. The Zionist regime forces and settlers have killed more than 330 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including East Al-Quds and Gaza, since the beginning of the year.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fun. on the football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadali, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, issues, and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the holy book of the Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. So today we'll be discussing the problems and obstacles we will be facing when we are raising our children, and how we can solve these problems and obstacles. Dear Sayyid, please teach us how we can solve these obstacles.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajhum. One of the major obstacles that we are facing today, and a lot of parents face, and that is mental pressure. We are putting great amount of pressure mentally on our kids, and that is very distractive for them to be in such an environment. Now, the kids inside the house, when they face so much pressures, now they need to find a way to release this kind of pressure elsewhere.
Right.
Now, if the house itself is a pressured house, relationship between the parents is not very stable.
Strained.
Parents is always constantly yelling and nagging. Parents constantly pressuring their kids to do things. Now the kids feel that they need to take it out elsewhere. So they would go outside their friends, and they release it in a way or another, either through smoking, either through drugs, either through music, either through heart, whatever.
They
the
need
kids
an outlet.
Can find a way to extract this this pressure from himself, they would do that. So this is a very devastating effect. And according to some studies that have been released in October 2000, they said that most of kids at the age of 8, they go through this sort of pressure. Now, an 8-year-old kid should have no pressure in life.
Right.
Why would they have pressure? And when they done over 200 personal interviews with kids who are 8 years of age in the City University in London, they found that these kids, they said they have some sort of pressure and stress.
Right.
And so we start to wonder, why would kids at this age have such stress level? And obviously that was in 2000. Now we're in 2020. Right. So 2021. We going to become in a few more months, and we're going to hit 2022.
Right.
So that's almost 12 years. So you can imagine that number would multiply, and you can see that year by year, these kind of pressures do not get relieved, they get worse and worse. So as parents, we need to become very aware that the stress we cause in the house will play a role on the child and will become distracted, even, like we said, as early as 8.
Right. And with that, dear Sayyid, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the obstacles we face when raising our children and how to solve them. Just before going on a break, we said that according to research from the year 2000, children as young as 8 years old were facing increased pressure in their lives. Dear Sayyid, do we have any suggestion as to what this pressure might be? Or is it just a something cumulative from
okay,
different
so
factors?
When we said that the study had been done 2000, right? Now we're 2022, so that's almost 22 years, right? So I only said in the last 12 years, you can imagine how the number went high. Right. Now, with this pressure, sometimes as parents, we ourselves go through pressure of life, right? Now, me as a father, for example, let's say I don't have a job. I don't have a source of income. Now, that will put a pressure on me. Now, what do I take my pressure out on?
Right.
Usually I have my wife, right? Or my kids.
My children.
Right. My children. So it shows, my pressure manifests itself elsewhere.
Right.
The mother herself, she might be going through a problem of her own. She wants to, you know, steam out all this stress and she takes it out on the children. So then we pass it on. So the child has no problem of his own, and then all of a sudden he has to deal with something else. And sometimes, so based on the pressure that me and my partner face in life, based on these things, we will take it out on our children. Or sometimes the children themselves are being bad, I get stressed out, I get too much pressure, and then I take it back on them. So it becomes like a cycle.
Right, an evil cycle.
Yeah. So as parents, we need to be very aware that this is a dangerous thing and it's causing children a great deal of pain and suffering. If that grows with them, it will definitely turn into a mental problem.
And this pressure that children are facing, is it from the advancement of technology? Is it from grades?
No. So it's a multiple things, but at least for now, we're talking about the parents themselves.
Right.
Okay, now other things might cause stress to the child. But at least in the house, from his parents, there shouldn't be any type of stress. So if he gets stressed out elsewhere, he should come to the house and relax.
Right.
The house should be a source of
comfort.
That
should be his outlet.
Yeah. It shouldn't be the opposite. It shouldn't be the place where he gets charged and he leaves to the outside world and release his pressure points. No. The house should be always maintained. Now, when it comes to stress in the family and pressure, there are many things we can do to alleviate and relieve such stress, right? Now, one of the things that we don't pay attention to is that we are living in a very noisy world these days. We're constantly, there's something in the background. I don't know if you have noticed.
Right, yeah. Especially in big cities.
Yeah, it's like I can't remember the last time I was just sitting by myself with no noise. Either TV is on, either my phone is on, either my laptop is on. There's something is on.
Right.
If it's not mine, it's my kids. If it's not my kids, it's my wife. So there's something constant in the back. And this kind of noise constantly, it takes that sense of serenity and that sense of quietness.
Right.
And thus you're constantly charged and stressed out, and you have all this pressure.
Right, right. And with that, dear Sayyid, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the obstacles we face when raising our children and how to solve them. Dear Sage, just before we went on a break, you said that we live in a very, very noisy world. Please continue where you left off.
Because we live in a very noisy world, and sometimes that contributes to the amount of stress that we are facing. In fact, a lot of it is because of that. Now they're right. Talking about dopamine release in the brain and
right.
all these things that happens because we are so addicted to our devices. Right. And obviously, the more dopamine release in your brain, the more withdrawal you have. And, you know, so now your system is out of balance
right.
due to dopamine release. And what happens is you become very agitated. You become easily angered. You become
right.
very sensitive.
Right.
Why? Because your hormones are not balanced no more. Because you get so much dopamine release.
You crave it and you depend on it.
Not just crave it, you depend on it, but your body is drained out of it.
Right.
Right? And then you just, like, you know, it's like, have you seen this withdrawal symptoms when a person quits smoking?
Right.
And the first few days,
from
like, you talk,
turkey
to,
quitting.
You talk
right.
to them and they blow in your face.
Right.
Same thing. So we live kind of in this world where all these things have drained us. And we don't have. So what I say is, like, to create a bit of sense of a quietness and serenity in the house, turn off everything, turn off all these devices.
Right.
And have a bit of quiet time. You know, sometimes I turn off the power and I put a few candles just to have that kind of comfort where I have nothing.
Right.
It's
right.
kind of relaxing. It's, you know, for 5-10 minutes, it gives you a bit. So as a family, try to turn off everything and just have a family time together.
Right. So eliminate the things that are stressful.
That creates stress itself. That
right.
create pressure itself. And like I'm telling you, these things create a lot of pressure. Now, not to even mention the psychological effect that you get about the things that you're already seeing anyway.
Right,
because everything
yeah.
that you see, obviously not everything is innocent. So
right.
a lot of things actually play a big role, and they deliberately
right, right.
trying to mess
yeah.
up with your mind. So
right.
that will create even more points. So I'm saying, you know what? Turn everything off. Go out for a walk. Go to the park. Enjoy nature. Do something as a family without all these distractions.
Right.
Release all your pressure, right? Don't stay in the house and constantly be there. Even though I think I remember a study done way back about TV itself. You know, when you put TV, it emits all these rays.
Right.
They said always keep a door open or a window open. So there's constantly the air is refreshed. Because if these rays gets emitted from the TV, it creates a sense of pressure. A person becomes always pressured and nervous and
right.
what have you. So turn them off. Go for a walk, go to the park, have family time, have a quiet time, enjoy yourselves. At least you get to have this bit of release instead of just, you know, constantly being agitated. And also have, you know, have a bit of practice here and there, do a bit of exercise and so on and so forth.
Dear Sayed, I will unfortunately have to interrupt you because we are out of time for today's program. Dear Sayed, I thank you for your time and for your insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If the dear listeners have any questions or other relevant comments and feedback, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. You can also visit our website, parstoday.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media accounts we have on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
International Monetary Fund has warned the emergency support provided by central banks and finance ministries during the COVID-19 pandemic has fueled speculation and left the world vulnerable to another financial crisis. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Patricia Cohen and Alan Rappaport. The piece is titled, World's Growth Cools and the Rich-Poor Divide Widens. The article has been published by the New York Times. A closely watched report warned on Tuesday, 12th of October, as the world economy struggles to find its footing, the resurgence of the coronavirus and supply chain chokeholds threaten to hold back the global economic recovery's momentum. The International Monetary Fund said in its latest World Economic Outlook report, the overall growth rate will remain near 6% this year, a historically high level after a recession. But the expansion reflects a vast divergence in the fortunes of rich and poor countries. Worldwide poverty, hunger, and unmanageable debt are all under upswing. Employment has fallen, especially for women, reversing many of the gains they made in recent years. Uneven access to vaccines and healthcare is at the heart of the economic disparities. While booster vaccine shots are becoming available in some wealthier nations, a staggering 96% of people in low-income countries are still unvaccinated. Geeta Gopinath, the IMF's chief economist, wrote in the report, "Recent developments have made it abundantly clear that we're all in this together, and the pandemic is not over anywhere until it is over everywhere." The outlook for the United States, Europe, and other advanced economies has also darkened. Factories hobbled by pandemic-related restrictions and bottlenecks at key ports around the world have caused crippling supply shortages. A lack of workers in many industries is contributing to the clogs. The U.S. Labor Department reported on Tuesday, 12th of October, that a record 4.3 million workers quit their jobs in the month of August to take or seek new jobs or to leave the workforce altogether. In the United States, weakening consumption and large declines in inventory caused the International Monetary Fund to pare back its growth projections to 6% from earlier 7% estimates in July. In Germany, manufacturing output has taken a hit because key commodities are hard to find, and lockdown measures over the summer have dampened growth in Japan. Fear of rising inflation, even if likely to be temporary, is growing. Prices are climbing for food, medicines, and oil, as well as for cars and trucks. Inflation worries could also limit government's ability to stimulate the economy if a slowdown worsens. As it is, the unusual infusion of public support in the United States and Europe is winding down. Geeta Gopinath, the International Monetary Fund's chief economist, said, "Overall risks for economic prospects have increased, and policy trade-offs have become more complex." The IMF lowered its 2021 global economic growth forecast to 5.9%, down from 6% projected in July. For 2022, the estimate is 4.9%. Gregory Dacko, chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, said, The key to understanding the global economy is that recoveries in different countries are out of sync. He said each and every economy is suffering or benefiting from its own idiosyncratic factors. Gregory Dacko said for countries like China, Vietnam and South Korea, whose economies have large manufacturing sectors, inflation hits them where it hurts the most, raising costs of raw materials that reverberate through the production process. The pandemic has underscored how economic success or failure in one country can ripple throughout the world. Floods in Shaanxi, China's mining region, and monsoons in India's coal-producing states contribute to rising energy prices worldwide. A COVID outbreak in Ho Chi Minh City that shuts factories means shop owners in Hoboken won't have shoes and sweaters to sell. National Monetary Fund warned that if the coronavirus or its variants continue to hopscotch across the globe, it could reduce the world's estimated output by as much as $5.3 trillion over the next 5 years. The worldwide surge in energy prices threatens to impose more hardship as it hampers the economic recovery. Recently, oil prices hit a 7-year high in the United States. With winter approaching, Europeans are worried that heating costs will soar when temperatures drop. In other spots, the shortages have cut even deeper, causing blackouts in some places that paralyze transport, closing down factories and threatening food supplies. In some Southeast Asian countries, electricity is being rationed in many provinces and many companies are operating at less than half of their capacity, contributing to an already significant slowdown in economic growth. India's coal reserves have dropped to dangerously low levels. And over the weekend, Lebanon's 6 million residents were left without any electricity for more than 24 hours after fuel shortages shut down the nation's power plants. The power outage is just the latest in a series of disasters created by the United States and its Western allies there. Its economic and financial crisis has been one of the world's worst in the past 150 years. Oil producers in West Asia and elsewhere are lately benefiting from the jump in oil prices, but many nations in the region and North Africa are still trying to resuscitate their pandemic-battered economies. According to newly updated reports from the World Bank, 13 of the 16 countries in that region will have lower standards of living this year than they did before the pandemic, in large part because of the underfinanced, imbalanced, and ill-prepared healthcare systems. Other countries were so overburdened by debt even before the pandemic that governments were forced to limit spending on healthcare to repay foreign lenders. In Latin America and the Caribbean, there are fears of a second lost decade of growth like the one experienced after 2010. In South Africa, over one-third of the population is out of work. And in East Asia and the Pacific, a World Bank update warned that COVID-19 threatens to create a combination of slow economic growth and increasing inequality for the first time this century. Businesses in Indonesia, Mongolia, and the Philippines lost on average 40% or more of their typical monthly sales. In Thailand and in many Pacific Island economies are expected to have less output in 2023 than they did before the coronavirus pandemic. Overall, though, some developing economies are doing better than last year, partly because of the increase in prices of commodities like oil and metals that they produce. Economic growth projections ticked up slightly to 6.4% in 2021 compared to 6.3% estimated in July. Carl Tannenbaum, chief economist at Northern Trust, said, "The recovery has been incredibly uneven, and that's a problem for everyone. Developing countries are essential to global economic function. The outlook is clouded by uncertainty. The International Monetary Fund warned erratic policy decisions, like U.S. Congress's delay in lifting the debt ceiling, can further set back the economic recovery. but the biggest risk is the emergence of a more infectious and deadlier coronavirus variant. Ms. Geeta Gopinath, the International Monetary Fund's chief economist, urged vaccine manufacturers to support the expansion of vaccine production in developing countries. Earlier this year, the IMF approved $650 billion worth of emergency currency reserves that has been distributed to countries around the world. In this latest report, it again called on wealthy countries to help ensure that these funds are used to benefit poor countries that have been struggling the most with the fallout from the coronavirus. David Malpass, the president of the World Bank, said, "We're witnessing what I call tragic reversals in development across many dimensions." He added, "Progress in reducing extreme poverty has been set back for years. For some countries, it has been set back by a decade or even more." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to RIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
And every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah. Never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. We all know that the Kaaba, the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, is situated in the city of Mecca in the Hijaz, a place that it is incumbent upon all Muslims to at least once in their lifetime, when they have the ability, the physical, the financial and even mental ability to do so, to visit that house, to go around it, say, Allahumma labbaik, that, oh Allah, I have accepted your invitation. No, rather, I have accepted, oh Allah, your servant is here. What invitation? There's no invitation. Your servant is here. The house is such blessing, it has such grandeur, it has such a high rank in Islam, that nobody would dare to do anything to it. Not to say in history nothing was done to it, no. There were certain events in history that, you know, resulted in this blessed house being destroyed. But we see today that there are certain individuals who, when the Kaaba was apparently, you know, targeted by a group of Muslims, they had a big fuss, not understanding that what they were doing in killing thousands of innocent Muslims and believers was far worse. And in this tradition, we can see that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is comparing the station and the position of a believer to that higher than that of the Kaaba. That the Kaaba is a building, is in, if you like to say, an inanimate object in its apparent nature, but it is given such a veneration. Why is it that a believer whose rank is higher than this particular building is not given the same? This is something for us to ponder upon, something for us to think. The tradition is this. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said that the believer is more sanctified than the Kaaba. We know that when it comes to the Kaaba, there are certain rules and regulations that must be observed, certain acts that must be done. When it comes to the believer, there are also these acts, these laws, these rules, these regulations, this legislation. And by listening to this tradition of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, you may be able to extract that the observance of those laws and regulations concerning the mu'min, concerning the believer, are far more important than those concerning the Kaaba. Not to say that the Kaaba is any less, no. Cover at his own position, but this is something higher. The believer is more sanctified than the Kaaba. Inshallah, until our next episode, my dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.